Yes, we have like 20% solar, 20-30% wind. And then we have a number of dispatchable power plants, which basically jump in as backup, and also some storage cascade. The storage will not entirely be only batteries, because batteries can only bring us over a few hours. We also need some long-term storage in form of synfuels, hydrogen, which is produced by solar wind electricity. And also when we talk about, is Australia able to do 100%? Australia has a land mass of more than the EU with the population of Mexico City. If there is a place on this planet where it is possible, it is here, besides the fact that the average wind farm in Australia has 50% more output than, for example, one in North Germany, where I'm from. Right. So the wind regime here is very good, and the solar regime three times more than the average European place. So the resources are huge.
We are not leading this renewable energy race in Australia. In fact, we're 20 behind. To 30 years behind, particularly Europe and parts of the US. But we have the ability to leapfrog. We have a low population base, a relatively low industry base, a low electricity demand because of that. And as Sven has said, some of the best renewable energy resources in the world, which means that renewable energy is part of Australia's competitive advantage. What the challenge is the cultural and political mindset that thinks of Australia as quarry Australia, that our biggest competitive advantage is cheap minerals that we dig out of the ground and we export. That's actually not going to be our competitive advantage going forward. Our renewable energy industry and utilising those resources and then potentially attracting industry to Australia to utilise that will be Australia's competitive advantage. And you know, we're just scratching the tip of the iceberg here around the potential.
I want to touch on that, but just to go back to wind power really quickly, where we have the potential to have a massive output, is wind power also low maintenance?
There is a need for maintenance, obviously. They're very specialized jobs. They're usually involved with climbing, so you really have to climb up there, and they're up to 150 to 200 meters. So you need a very specialized infrastructure, specialized jobs for that. But that also means that you have a very local jobs because you can't organize it via foreigners. So there is, you need to be close by. So the maintenance argument is a good one, I would say.
We've just had the announcement that Hazelwood is going to close down by March next year, which essentially is one of the world's highest polluting coal-powered stations. And that also means the loss of 750 jobs for people who work in the local area. Mm. How easy would it be, if it were possible, for those people who work or have worked at Hazelwood to transition from there into a renewable industry?
So there's an organisation in the Latrobe Valley in Victoria where Hazelwood is located called Voices of the Valley. They established because there was a big mine fire at Hazelwood Mine, which actually caused a peak in deaths and things like that. It's really real tragedy, and there's real levels of negligence, both in government and in the company that ran it. They have turned their thoughts to thinking about, well, what can we do? What are the jobs of the future? It's already a poor community. What they have created is a plan for an energy transition centre, which is to facilitate new local innovative energy-related businesses. So it could be doing massive energy efficiency retrofits across the communities. It could be grid-level batteries, because actually they have the interconnector going to Tasmania. So if you put grid batteries there, then it would make sense, because you know it can provide storage and balancing for a whole range of different parts of the electricity system, not just in Victoria, but in Tasmania as well. They know that it's not just about retraining into renewable energy. There are some opportunities, and they're also looking to attract manufacturing. So there's some small things happening, but more needs to be done.
On the past Friday, the Victorian Premier, Daniel Andrews, announced that there would be a $266 million support package for these people in the Latrobe Valley region. Would that money go towards those sort of initiatives that would pop up?
One would hope. Unfortunately, it's a little bit too late. This is the kind of thing that needed to be thought about 3 years ago and plans put in place, so that when Hazelwood does shut down in March, those jobs, workers already started their retraining, those jobs were already available. Instead, we're going to have this gap between while planning happens and people are out of work and things like that. So one of the biggest problems is the boom and bust policy cycle that we've experienced in Australia. Australians love renewable energy, and so when a government wants to do something popular, they'll announce a renewable energy policy, and then it'll go much more successfully than they planned. And that means that the fossil fuel vested interests or party ideologues will turn around and say, we want something different. This is too successful. It's eating into our profits. And so it gets cut and the industry stalls. And that means that it's very difficult to build up a skilled employment base in wind technicians and things like that. And a lot of our renewable energy engineers, of which I studied with many at UNSW, go overseas because they have more stable job opportunities. If we get the policy settings right that facilitate a steady uptake of our wind and solar resource and market, then we're going to see lots more jobs.
What would some of these policies look like?
We talk about three aspects to the energy transition. We need to reboot our energy system, we need to repower the country, and we need to remove the roadblocks. So rebooting the system means putting in place things like a change to the national electricity objective that says not only do we need affordable and reliable energy system, but we also need a sustainable and fair or climate-safe energy system as well. And if we put those extra dimensions to it, we means we might actually have a chance of having rules that are fit for purpose for this new energy paradigm. The second thing, we need to repower the country. So we need to get more renewables in, and we need policy support mechanisms for that. There's reverse auctions or clean energy auctions.
Does that mean, are the auctions?
It's a trend worldwide, and the idea is that governments or even companies like Google tender for a certain amount of electricity generation, and companies bid in to try and provide that at the cheapest cost. And you can set the parameters. And at the moment, so ACT has done a range of reverse auctions because they're headed to 100% renewables by 2020. And they've done it for solar, they've done it for wind, they've also done it for local storage. And they've got the cheapest wind prices in the country because of their tendering system or auction system.
Just wanted to explain the word cheap. We don't want to have as cheap as possible because cheap is very expensive. You have to usually buy it twice. If you get a very, very cheap wind turbine and lasts only 5 years, then it's at the end very expensive rather than buying a more expensive one which lasts 25 years.
Cost efficiency.
Yeah, absolutely. Cost efficiency. Thanks for the full spin.
As a formerly German engineer, I don't like the word cheap.
The third part is around removing the roadblocks. So it's about just transition, so packages for workers and communities where coal and other electricity generation is shutting down. It's about going, well, we need a managed and orderly plan to exit coal generators as renewable energy generators come online so they don't act as a roadblock. So those are the three building blocks of this transition to a clean energy future and the policies that we need.
I've got one more question for you, and hopefully this doesn't open a can of worms. What happened in South Australia a couple of months ago?
Well, the line came down, and when the cable, which transports electricity, has an interruption, you cannot transport electricity at this particular part.
There's a couple of things to say. One is, it was a perfect storm, pun intended. You know, it was a massive once in 50 year storm. AEMO, the Australian Energy Market Operator, has done a preliminary report. They'll do a more detailed report. And they don't know, as the system operator, all of the things that happened in that few seconds and then few hours, sort of 12 hours. There are elements that are known. For example, that three transmission lines to the north of the state did come down, that the interconnector was running at high capacity at the same time. There's a blame game being played at the moment. And there's also already been evidence to point to the fact that there is a concerted campaign around South Australia more broadly, because South Australia is one of the leaders in the world in terms of the uptake of renewable energy. It's Denmark, Texas, South Australia,
really?
Costa Rica, you know, four of the places around the world that are leading this transition. And there are a lot of vested interests that want to see that fail.
I didn't know that South Australia was so at the helm of it. What are they doing to really put them at the lead of the pack?
Well, they have a very high share on wind power. So South Australia has a 35% share on wind, which is very high.
And about 5% solar. So they're a bit over 40%.
Yeah. So you mean compared to other states?
No. So they have 40% of South Australia's electricity is generated on average from renewable sources. That's one of the highest proportions in the world from variable renewables, so solar and wind.
I mean, other countries like Norway have 98% renewables. That's not the point, but it's mainly hydro.
It's hydro, and we've known how to do hydro for years and years and years. These newer technologies, mature and established and cost-effective technologies, but, you know, how to manage a system around them, South Australia is at one of the forefronts. And the thing that they've done is that they just happen to be in one of the windiest places in the world, and they've been able to capitalise on the national renewable energy target because it's a competitive scheme, and that means that you go where the best wind resource is, because wind is the cheapest technology, and the better wind resource you get, the more output you get, which means the more bang for your buck. And the government is backing it in as well and coming out really championing and going, this is our competitive advantage and this is the way of the future for this state.